back to business. All right. So we are, what did we decide the case number was? Did anyone write that down? 14-736. Okay.
To the extent it applies.
Right, to the extent it applies. Hi, this is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol on June 3rd at about 12:45 with the Basin Electric Power Cooperative discussion that relates to some degree to case number 14-736. This is a meeting they requested to update us on some of their issues relating to EPA's 111D proposals. And so we have no agenda from our standpoint. Do you have any opening comments, Brian?
Or no, just thank
Randy?
You.
I do not have opening comments, except for that I think Basin has some other time constraints within the schedule, so I'm anxious to hear from them.
Yep. So the floor is yours. We have until 2 o'clock marked out, so feel free to use all of it.
Okay.
Or finish early. We're fine with either.
Which would you prefer? All right. For the record, this is Dale Nieswag with Basin Electric Power Cooperative, and what we wanted to do here is pretty much provide an informational type presentation to the commission and allow for a question and answers. What we've been doing is going to some of the main states in our service area and doing this. We figure there's a kind of a lull here where you've got the proposed rule out, the final rule is not coming out until later, and just using the opportunity to talk about our position from being a multi-state generator and some things that we think are important to 111D from a state perspective as far as a state implementation type plan. So that's what we're looking for is information. It'll be probably kind of a tag team. I'll go through the main parts with others jumping in as needed. And feel free to stop at any point for questions or clarification on this.
Yeah, why don't we just, I should have done this first, but why don't we just go around and introduce everybody to and
okay.
We can talk.
Mike Hagel with Basin Electric.
Lyle with Basin Electric.
Jim Sheldon, Basin Electric.
Jean Schaefer with Basin Electric.
Okay. Then we've got the three commissioners and our staff, Jack Hsu, Victor Shook, and Jerry Lean, and then a spy from MDU, Darcy. All right.
Spy to our public meeting.
Yes.
And the first couple of pages here, we don't need to go along with this group, but I know there's been some new Public Service Commission staff, so I thought we'll just put in the first slide, just simply Basin Electric service area over the nine-state area and our generation portfolio. And the generation portfolio slide is just, it gives kind of a backdrop to how we think they should be looking at, or EPA should be looking at the 111D, not from a state border perspective, but from a resource perspective. You know, when we develop our projects, we don't look at state borders. We look at where's the best place for the resource, be that coal, wind, gas. We decide where's the best location to put it in and do that. So state boundaries have not been a consideration when we've done this. So part of what we're going to be proposing is that EPA allow us to still look at our portfolio and our system location based on where it's at and not restricted to state boundaries.
Well, just to tee it up early, I mean, you know that from my viewpoint, state plan. So that's, I think, one of the outcomes is for me to better understand what the situation you're in,
okay,
and why specifically a state plan couldn't work. Mm. And then just because we had a meeting with Dave Glott here the other day, and we got his input, and I've met with the Attorney General, and he's waiting to see what the rule says, but my gut is the North Dakota is kind of leaning towards a state plan submission now with some unique carve-outs that say that. So how we're going to do all this with – because I think you guys have to go regional plan. But I guess if there's one thing to come out of this meeting for me is just to understand the differences where you're at and how that might affect how this plays out.
Let me just step back for a second because we were thinking about this before we came over. The first thing, we know that the legal issues are going to play out. We think that, you know, and we briefed the governor on this as well, and we talked significantly about the timing of some of these lawsuits that could move forward. And frankly, we think a lot of this is on significantly shaky legal ground from the EPA's perspective, particularly where it touches on issues like existing PSC jurisdiction, all that stuff. That said, this proposal and this discussion inside that framework does a couple things just on the top of it. Exploring what it means from a multi-state perspective means that you have more than 1 year to look at this. Right. So right off, we think that makes good sense. Just saying we don't want to get this done in a year, we want it to take more than that time, and we think it's valuable to look at both. So that gives you extra time in the response. So that's one of the foundational things. Second, we don't know where the legal is going to shake out, but this gives you the option, even under a state plan, to work through those multi-state utility issues, because you're going to have, no matter what, under state plan, those utilities that cross boundaries, and how do you get through that process? And so that's really what this is about, that last bullet.
Okay.
And that's a good point. And what we want to make sure that is understood is that we are going to, from a basis standpoint, do several things. Number one, we're going to challenge the rule. If it's not substantially changed from what is proposed, we will be challenging it legally because we think it's wrong. We are going to be supporting the state in their efforts from a legal standpoint, and we'll support the state plan. You know, we've been in conversation with Dave Glott as well. So I just want to make sure that's up front, that we are supporting and what the state is doing.
There. That's why I threw it out there to see.
Yeah, what and that's and because the last we talked with Dave Glott, he was saying that at this point they're looking at a state plan that would maybe just focus on block one, which is the generation efficiency at the plants, and leave it at that. And that's fine. We are supportive of that. We've got the legal arguments of pursuing supporting the state, but what we've got in this plan also is if the legal challenges fail, if the state has to comply and needs to put together a state plan showing compliance, this is some things that we think would help us out and not inhibit or hurt any other utility in the state. And so from a state plan, we're still supportive of what the state would do.
To the point being that for whatever reason, middle of July, middle of August, all of a sudden you've got an EPA plan that you've got to comply with, and that's the way it shakes out, not knowing the future, to not have considered some of these aspects and all of a sudden be thrown into all the issues that could unlock, that's a problem. So this is just one way of starting to think about, okay, what's going to happen?
That's good. So.
And the next couple of pages are just kind of an overview of the EPA proposal. Looking around the room, everyone is very, very clear on what the EPA proposal is. Looking at basins actions, what we've done since the proposed rule came out, or even before, we put together an internal working group of engineers and legal people and government relations people to look at what could be done from the rule at first. We've held legislative briefings with different states, with our federal delegation, just trying to get them as much information they can on basin and kind of our position. We've had several direct meetings with EPA as well, expressing our concerns and kind of some of our ideas as well. And then at the beginning, before the proposed rule came out, we tried to put together an Energy States Coalition and seeing if there were states and that would be want to get together in sort of a formal type plan. And we had, I'm trying to think of the number, do you remember the 19 to 20 states came in and were interested in doing that. But then, of course, once the rules came out, it was individual state goals. So it kind of hurt the chances.
Over at BSC.
Yeah, that's correct. That was the one that was held in April with the state health groups, the state agency groups, and the industry groups. So from what we thought would work out well, just with the way the rules set up, didn't. The next page,
How are other states? Like, I know all the commissioners, obviously, from the states you guys work, but I haven't sensed how they're approaching this, like their governor's office and their, I mean, is Minnesota as engaged as we are? Is South Dakota engaged as we are? Is Wyoming? I mean, I just can't get a feel for what their governors, because their commissioners, some are just sitting back. I mean, like way back.
Yeah, and we've, in our conversations with South Dakota, that's kind of where they're at. They're right saying, we got to wait till the rule comes out, because right now we're just in a box. We can't do a lot. So that's their position. Wyoming is pretty much like North Dakota, very actively engaged and looking kind of the same route of the building block one type of thing, but being kind of open to what the rule comes out. But I would say very engaged, very involved from their DNR to their Attorney General's office. In fact, we just had a meeting with them 2 weeks ago.
Yesterday, and Al out there, so I know they're tracking. But Iowa and Minnesota, what are they doing?
Minnesota, we haven't engaged with them very much. In Iowa, what they've got is kind of a unique thing. They got some of the utilities getting together and saying, okay, in a perfect world, what would we like to see as a plan? but they're also engaging their environmental groups as well to look at. They're more on if the plan goal stays as is, how would we meet it? And that's kind of what their focus has been on.
Okay.
One of the things that we've been talking about early on was the reliability situation. And what we're seeing now is more and more groups come out. You've had MISO, SPP, NERC, EPRI, FERC, and I put the Energy Information Association in there as well, because they came out with a report, didn't really say, you know, pro or against, but a couple of things they did bring up was they said they think the retirement of coal plants is going to be much higher than they even saw the year before, and higher than EPA talked about. And they said they see rates going up, especially over the first 5 years. They think there will be a leveling off after that or coming back down. I don't quite see where that happens, but those are the two points that they bring up, so that's why I put that they had concerns in it. So, but they haven't come out right out and said no or against it. But when you start to see the regional transmission organizations, the reliability councils coming out and expressing concerns about the reliability of the grid system, we think that gives credibility to some of the things that we've been saying as well. So it's not just utilities talking, it's the regulators. When this first came out and when the proposed rule came out, we sat down and put together, okay, what kind of is our position on 111D, and that's what you'll see is our plan recommendations. Number one was to support utility-based plans, which I'll get into in just a little bit in the presentation. We think that EPA must respect the state primacy. When you look at 111D especially, it gives control to the states, and we think that EPA really has to focus on allowing that to happen. We think they should settle the legal question first. Now, we've seen some legislation come up on the federal level that allows that to happen. We've heard rumors that EPA may be looking at that, but we think it's just smart to say, let's get it figured out whether it's going to pass muster or not before we spend a huge amount of state time, utility time, putting together plans that may not be needed.
How does that happen? How do you do that? Settle the legal question first?
We think legislative, EPA or legislatively.
What do you mean, Congress?
Yes.
Passing what?
There's a bill out there for.
Go ahead. There's two bills out there, one in the House, one in the Senate, that just says that nothing can be implemented until the legal questions have been answered.
I know, but so they develop a rule and say, okay, nobody has to make any plans to meet this rule until. Is it settled in court?
So yes, until it's been settled by the courts.
So what's the time frame? How does that actually, from a practical standpoint, work?
So it would take a recognition, first of all, that there's people out there with standing. So you've got the Murray lawsuit out there already. So you've got a piece pending in front of the courts right now. Mm-hmm. So technically the Congress could say, well, we're not going to act until that particular case is settled. Or you could say that there are specific questions legally that they think need to be addressed, and then they would wait to see if the Supreme Court took them up. But the time frame would be indeterminate. It would be determined on the court process. But, again, the theory being that what is the PSC's jurisdiction in this issue? Mm-hmm. And nobody's got that in hand. What is the state jurisdiction in this process? The way the rule was crafted brings all those things into question. So why create all this administrative process? You know, what we're going to talk about here in the next piece is all these possibilities. Right. We're just doing that so that people are thinking through this. But how much energy do you really want to spend crafting rules internal to state, crafting plans internal to state, if you know that in 2 years this thing may just go away?
But is there any point in hanging on to that? Because for one thing, it's probably never going to come up for a vote in the Senate. And if it did, it's going to get vetoed anyway. I mean, is the president really going to sign legislation that nixes what his EPA administrator is doing? No. If he didn't want it to happen, he'd tell her not to do it. So I don't know why we would hang on to that.
I tend to put it this way. We're not hanging a lot on it. Would we support the two bills saying that that's a good concept? Yeah. You know, would I give them a better than 25% chance of happening? No.
A couple things. When the rule comes out and it's appealed, there will be a motion to stay the rule pending the appeal. That's very rarely granted, but it is occasionally. And one of the factors they consider is the chance that you'll be successful on appeal. On this particular rule, there is kind of a general agreement among legal experts that there are several things wrong with this rule, and there's likely to, EPA is likely to lose some of those. Now, if you can convince the courts, D.C. Court of Appeals of that, that's another thing. But this has a better, that happens only about 5% of the time, but this rule probably has maybe a 10 or 15% chance or something higher than normal because of that.
That, I think, is a reasonable hope.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think anything as far as a bill is just grandstanding.
And then there's a bill now where they're looking at an oversight House Senate committee and trying to get enough votes where they could override a veto. Yeah. So that if that gets legs, then maybe that would have a shot. Who knows?
But again, it's what we would be recommending. If the rules change substantially, provide another comment period instead of just going with what you've got.
Is that likely? I mean, is there?
I would say it's probably got a little less of a chance than the stay until we get it done. But I don't know. I would say probably not. But again, if this is our wish list of what we would like to see happen.
So, just to hit on, for example. So if the state of North Dakota has relied on a particular number in terms of your thought process in developing a state plan, we're under the opinion that these numbers are going to change for a number of reasons. You know, there's four states particularly that have numbers that are very difficult to defend from that standpoint, South Dakota being one of them. So if the, you know, cap is there and that's the way it's going to be, then something else has to change. Does the health department, does the governor deserve another opportunity to take a crack at it if the number significantly changes? We think yes. But will they do that?
I think it's odd that they don't have to, personally. I mean, to change it substantially and then not take any more comments, just say this is it. Mm-hmm. Seems pretty outrageous to me. But
yeah. No, again, we think from a common sense standpoint, we think that legally you should wait until things are settled illegally. We think a common sense standpoint is if you make a substantial change in that, you allow another round of comment to go forward. Number five we had was allow off-ramps for the rule due to system reliability or cost. Again, we know that's been floated out by a lot of utilities, a lot of states, a lot of regulators as well.
EPA has even started to endorse that.
We think there's been, again,
I've heard Janet.
Yeah, the rumors are floating. I mean, and you don't know how much credibility to give them, but I mean, rumors have been floating. Do they stay, that they provide comments?
Can you give me an example of what that would be? I can't get my brain around how that would work either and accomplish their goals.
MISO would do that. Yeah. Would they accomplish their goals? No way.
Well, that's what I don't get.
It'd be like buying yourself some time. There'd be some, until you can build your new peaking gas, wind and peakers, they'd allow these coal to run.
So just extend the time period for running the coal.
It'd be the RTOs that
the
have that.
The retirements wouldn't come as soon.
Well, but then, too, and FERC came out with a letter just saying as these come in, they want a chance to look at them and then compare them to system reliability and timelines. So if they would see a problem, then they could start to call
but
for
it. MISO and SPP are supposed to be able, they can stop retirement of a plant for reliability concerns. So that's what it might be, something like MISO would say, we're not going to let you retire this one. And then you have two agencies conflicting themselves. You'd have the NERC against the EPA. Mm-hmm. That's the way I understand it.
Well, then who sets the cost? Sure, you can retire it. You just have to replace it. And who decides that this cost is reasonable and this isn't?
But then you're getting into a whole other discussion as far as, you know, should there be one? Yes. Then the second question is how should it be handled? How should it be developed? That's a whole other conversation, both on the cost and on the reliability side. Number six, allow all activities that capture carbon to count towards compliance goals. I mean, if this is our ultimate goal is to reduce carbon, then let's, you know, why are we just limiting it to electric generation plants? Why don't we look at everything that's out there? We've captured 130 million tons at Dakota Gasification. None of that would apply to the rules as written. FAR or ag has the ability to sequester carbon with their practices. None of that is involved in it either. If this is our true goal, is carbon reduction, let's look at everything and not just limit it to electric generation units. Again, yeah, is that going to happen? We don't know, but we think that's, again, a reasonable ask.
And so much of that depends on the legal issues surrounding how they're settled out, you know, because the rule itself abrogates the policy structure at the states. You know, it doesn't have something in there for you folks. It doesn't have something in there. So if that rule stands from a legal standpoint, all of these questions get opened up. If the rule fails legally, none of them do. So what we're saying is if X happens, then you have to be thinking about all these pieces in terms of how that comes together.
Number seven is to report to remove the 2020 interim goal. When you look at the goal, it's like, I believe it's almost 60 to 80% of the reductions happen right away in 2020. And if the rule comes out this year, you have legal requirements that, you know, the legal arguments get settled from anywhere from 2018, 2019, and you got to be ready to roll to 2020. There's just an unreasonable time frame you're trying to meet. And the last one we had was address new source review. You know, they want a 6% reduction or increase in the efficiency of power plants, but yet if you put too much into your plant, you kick new source review. So you're fighting yourself on trying to get to their ultimate goal again. So let's, if you're gonna want us to move towards that, give us the flexibility to do what's needed to try and get to that point. Well, the next slide, we talk about some of the legal arguments, and then we've already hit on a few of those, but from our standpoint, we think EPA lacks the authority to regulate existing EGUs under 111D. You've got the Section 112, where they're already regulated, that they lack the authority to regulate beyond the fence line. And I think that's some of the state's positions as well. We think the rule exceeds their authority in several areas, usurps state primacy, may result in an unconstitutional taking, and states must consider remaining useful life of a facility. And now we're starting to see that argument gain some traction and gain some attention as well when you start to look at what's been going on out there. So with that,
elaborate on that a little bit.
Which one?
States must consider remaining useful life of a facility.
Yeah, it's actually in the statute. It was in the 77 amendments. It was added it specifically says that the EPA administrator must give states authority to consider remaining useful life when they set the standards of performance for each facility. So the statute really is pretty clear that the state has to set the standard on a facility by facility basis, and the state is supposed to be given authority to consider remaining useful life.
Are we talking about considering it insofar as not shutting it down over some regulation, or are we talking about the value of it, making sure that, I don't know how this sort of factor collapses, but that the investor owns at least can build that into their rate of return?
I think it's supposed to be both. The state should be given the ability to look at recent investments like the $400 million scrubber we put on the back end of Leland Olds, for example, and that was with the understanding that we'd have at least 20 years of additional operation when we did that. EPA, that was part of Regional Haze, and considering the cost effectiveness of it, EPA agreed that that was a 20-year number. So if they come along with a rule now that says you have to shut down or forces us to shut down in a much shorter period of time, we've got a really strong legal argument that that's inconsistent with what the statute says and also inconsistent with what they just had determined for Regional Haze. So that, in our comments, that was one of our big arguments we pushed on our comments on this rule, is remaining useful life has to be allowed because the statute says it. And by the way, you've already made these determinations and required us to put these control technologies on our North Dakota and Wyoming facilities based on understanding that they'll be used at least 20 additional years, and now you're coming out with a rule that is going to really challenge our ability to do that. We'll have to see what the final number is to see if it actually does that, but there's a real potential that it will. So,
Lyle, on determining remaining useful life, is that just based on the latest requirement by EPA for an improvement like the scrubbers or the bag houses or whatever? Or who determines what the remaining useful life is?
Usually in rate cases, that's usually something the PSCs have historically done.
In the beginning, I think you do depreciation
schedule. Well, it seems like it changes, though.
It does, because they can extend that out, but it's just a schedule they put and they bring it online. I know like some companies like GRE have chosen to accelerate their depreciation so they can retire it earlier. But yeah, like when we get a wind farm, they'll do a depreciation based on 30 years or whatever we set. Mm-hmm.
So it's set from the beginning, or see the
or when you refinance. So, for example, on all of our RUS loans that we currently have, there's a remaining useful life built into that loan at the time we get it.
That's when they get really good, though, when they're depreciated out and you're still running them.
That's why I.
That's what's the.
I mean, it's a great argument, but it also.
In all of our cases,
calls for retiring a facility earlier than you could
call for retirement
run.
Or a retrofit or adding the controls necessary to get it done. To be in compliance.
But when we added the scrubber, for example, to Leland Olds, that was not only something the EPA considered, but it was also something RUS, a federal agency, considered and built into our loan to finance it. So there's those arguments mutually reinforce each other, actually, and they're pretty strong, I think. So that's one factor, I think, especially in North Dakota. there's several facilities in the same boat, Minn Kota, and everybody else. It's made big. Well, Big Stone is actually has a really strong argument there, and there are some indication EPA really is acknowledging that. Arizona raised it in their proceedings, and I think EPA is at least going to go down that road some, is what the folks from Arizona are telling me they're being told. So.
With that, the next part we want to get into is the company-based multi-state plan. And again, we want to make sure that everyone's clear that this is what we're looking at should the state have to develop a plan or submit a plan, you know, irregardless of the legal outcomes. If you have to put that together, this is where something that we think the state will allow us to do type of that thing. Because some of those things were coming in saying, we think this is what needs to be done from a state perspective for every utility. This is for a multi-state utility like Basin that this would work. And so having the ability to do this is going to help us comply with the plan if it comes out as is proposed.
I'm still confused on how this would work.
Okay.
You have deadline, let's say August 1st for the discussion. Or not, the final order, August 1st, 2015. Okay. So you have 1 year to submit a state plan. And then if you choose to not do a state plan, then you get an extra year. So isn't the real decision point, if we're going to submit a state plan, how does this come into play? Because we'll submit a state plan, they'll accept it or reject it, and then I'm missing the tie-in here. When you say you support a state plan, but this is in case it doesn't, then you want this plan.
You could do it. You could do a state plan that allows this trading capability within your state plan.
Okay.
Our thinking is that you could then petition the EPA to say, since we have this option in our plan, it is a de facto multi-state plan. Therefore, we should get the two-year extension to provide.
So we're submitting a multi-state plan.
So you could say that.
He talked about this when we met with him, and he described it more like the state plan would be allow the companies to develop their plan for compliance. I think that's what I'm.
And I think that's right. And the question becomes, you know, if you have to formally. There was a lot of discussion when this first came out that you'd have to go and make arrangements with other states and then go in as North Dakota, South Dakota,
right.
Wyoming as a multi-state plan. We kind of went down that path and thought, no, that really, you don't want to do the compact process. You don't want to go through all that. This represents a single state plan where you could start thinking about, frankly, how you can consider development across so you don't limit yourself. If you end up doing wind farms, you can end up doing something else. So it's a state plan with that flexibility of across the
allowing
boundaries.
The companies to meet it their way.
Exactly. And then so what we see this plan developing out, sure, this will work great for Basin. MDU may say this doesn't work at all for them. Doesn't matter. They can still do a totally state border-only plan and still not be in a foul of anything from an EPA side or from a state side. And as we walk through, I think you'll kind of see how this even this plan makes sure that Basin is in compliance in the state.
And I know this is your plan, and that probably works well, but this, an XL Energy or an MDU or an Otter Tail, we wouldn't want to turn them loose to develop their own plan. So this would have to be very specific just to co-ops, just to you, because you set your own rates, you decide what generation you want to build, because that's where we're not giving away anything if you guys do a multi-state plan. But I think we'd be giving away a lot if we let MDU or Otter Tail or XL do a multi-state plan.
I tell you what, if you could hold that question until we walk through this, and I don't know that is necessarily a true statement. So let's walk through this, and then as you see this, Okay. You can see that even having this option available to others is not going to be a detriment to the state, in our opinion. So
kind of what they're doing now. They're doing it on their own anyway, their plans, because they're building generation, right? Okay.
What you see is a map of kind of the main areas where we have generation. The numbers in yellow are basin either owned facilities or facilities we're responsible for. So that's the yellow. What's that?
As of now.
Well, this is as of end of year 2016. You know, because we're putting in some new generation in North Dakota, be that gas and some wind. So we went out to 2016 and said, here's our 2016 numbers.
Is Dickinson Wind in there or not?
Is what?
The Dickinson Wind is in
yes.
there?
Yes.
Okay. You got Stark County talked into it.
Yes. We made an assumption.
That may not have been the best assumption, but it was in there a couple months ago, and so it's still in there.
The numbers in white are the EPA numbers, the EPA goals that they have set out. I believe they're the 2030 numbers that are in there. So it just kind of shows you where we've got our resources. And where the resource now? There is a mistake I found out this morning on this. In Iowa, we say no coal, but we are responsible for 176 megawatts of coal there. And if you want, I can redo this map and get you an updated one.
Iowa's gotten short and fat.
Dale, it'd be helpful to have this electronically anyway. If you want to make that tweak and send it over, that'd be great.
We can do that.
What's the black 2 megawatts wind in Minnesota?
That's what we have under contract in Minnesota is 2 megawatts of wind. We just put that down there, but didn't.
Two of our members had developed little wind turbines.
Near Pipestone.
So as you can see, when you look at, North Dakota 1783, Montana 7071, Wyoming 7014, all fairly consistent. And then you look at South Dakota's numbers, which have been talked about consistently at 741, they are really in a box. But what we want to do with a multi-state plan is, if you go to the next page, is just have the ability to move generation and its associated emissions, or excuse me, megawatt hours and their associated emissions to other states. That's the overarching goal to do that. But, and I'll get into each, we'll kind of walk you through it step by step how this would happen, but the idea is that you're moving either what we're calling compliance megawatt hours and emissions, which are low carbon, be they natural gas, or no carbon, such as renewables. Those will be the ones. You're not moving coal emissions of megawatt hours across state lines. You're moving the low carbon, what they're considering low carbon emissions, and megawatt hours across the state lines. So, and this allows us to move that. So we'll get into the next page, and we'll...
What's wrong with moving coal?
Right.
We just think that opens up kind of a Pandora's box of people just dumping high carbon megawatt hours and emissions into other states, and we just think that's going to get a lot of pushback. And the goal with the goal of working in a lower carbon economy, which is where the president and the EPA want to go, we're saying let's work on where they want to go, which is natural gas and renewables. So we're saying, and we think that question is also going to come up and is already being considered with the wind, where you've got states or utilities that have wind facilities in one state and all their load members are in another state. They're going to have to address that part of it. So from a acceptance point of view and from a administrative point of view, we just thought that would be a smarter way to try and do the program.
How does WAPA tie into you guys? You and WAPA are part of the SPP stuff, but then what do they do with their hydro? I just jumped out at me.
Well, and we're just looking at our facilities and our.
You guys are so closely tied together. That seems
that goes back to Basin's history, though, because the original distribution co-ops were set up when the dams were built, and they got their power from the dams, and that's the original electricity distribution system.
We should reach out to WAPA to see what their plan is too.
Well, what happened is when there was enough power from the dams, the co-ops got together and built their own generation, which is what Basin Electric is. That's how it was formed. So we have
tracking all that, but I'm just curious what to do with WAPA.
WAPA's got a zero carbon resource, and so it's kind of not. They're not going to have the same compliance issues no matter what. It's all hydro.
There's none of their facilities.
They could use the help blend somebody.
Yeah.
No,
$1,000.
Now you might be getting into this, but so you just take all of your generation in North Dakota. What would your number be today per megawatt hour that you're emitting?
Our number today?
It's right around 2,000.
So how could you take... you don't have excess in North Dakota. I see the line here coming from North Dakota natural gas down to Wyoming. You're not below the 1783.
With the wind we're building, though, and the extra gas.
Okay, so once you get those added.
At the end of 2016, our number...
So, well, that's what this was, I thought. So this was 2016 with the wind. All the yellow.
I think the yellow was at the end of 2016, and the white is the goal.
Right.
The white is the EPA goal. If considering all of our wind, all of our new natural gas, I don't know what our number would.
Yeah, I think that was meant to be as an example. I don't know that we're saying that that's how it's going to work in this particular case.
You're not
case.
Saying there is natural gas.
No, we're not.
Extra.
No, not at this time. No.
But theoretically.
But theoretically, it could be. Yeah.
If this were approved, and although it doesn't technically affect us, but I think it makes the most obvious case, you're suggesting that because you just have some gas and a bunch of wind in South Dakota, you got almost no emissions per megawatt hours, so you would shift some of that credit down to Iowa, where apparently you have a tougher time, but from the state of South Dakota's perspective, they're going to be saying, look, as a state, we've got this crisis with Big Stone, and now what little we got going for us good in the basin facilities, you're shifting the credit down to Iowa. We need it here. And so I can't imagine South Dakota liking this idea.
But you're assuming that you're looking at it at the same perspective. When you look at the building block number two, where it says you should have put 70% of the natural gas combined cycle and back down coal, you've got a natural gas system that's going to be on SPP serving co-op members. You've got a coal plant in MISO serving a whole different set of members. How is that ever going to work? There's no way that you're going to let we're going to run ours at 70% to feed excess into the SPP market then to have it switch over. We're assuming that what's going to have to happen from the state is the state is have to look at each utility and say, each utility, how are you going to get to your number? You've got to get to the number. How do you do that? Do you add wind? Do you change your operations? What do you do?
So you're assuming that MDU, for example, would have the same flexibility and they could take a lot of their wind in North Dakota, blend it with the Big Stone plant, et cetera, to come up with their goal in every single state that they serve.
Correct.
So to your point, Commissioner, this is one of the reasons why we think the numbers are going to change. When the state of South Dakota was hit with this question of Big Stone, the way they developed those numbers was to say essentially that a plant that Basin Electric had not yet really run effectively, was brand new, was going to run at a 70-plus factor in order to balance out what would happen with Big Stone and still run Big Stone down, to a basically unrunnable position. And that's not going to be the way it works. Why? Unless we are foundationally forced into a situation where utilities are forced to run to meet other utility needs, that was one of the faulty premises in the whole structure of the plan.
What do you guys think of, these RTO plans that are coming out? SPP has got their own plan using North Dakota, and MISO's got their RTO plan. The RTOs are pushing hard that they should be based on those.
So each of these, the premise of some of these is that you take a pure carbon price, right? You take a carbon price and you attach it to every megawatt hour produced. And then you, through the RTO, assume that when you dispatch these various utility entities, so you dispatch a piece of coal, you attach a $10 price to everything, and so you bid it in that way. And that will therefore affect how much everything is run, and therefore you'll back down accordingly. In theory, there's some value in that discussion. In practice, and maybe in practice eventually, but think about this plan in terms of how it runs across various multi-state rules. The fact that we're taking the legal premise and stretching it as far as you can compared to where the state itself is at. Think about what that plan does.
We don't like it.
We're out.
I mean, the question, who has the authority?
Yeah.
How do you get that done?
This is where all these
groups have their plans are floating, right. And these RTOs are pushing their plans out there, and I think it's helpful to you to talk to the RTOs
yep,
to say, yo, no.
And we are talking to them as well. And so the thing that we want to – so we've talked to SPP about this as well, the question of what is dispatchable, how you put a carbon price on all these different pieces. We're in those discussions as well.
You push back
but,
to that, right?
But we're in a the uncomfortable position we're in as well is trying to think about the future and at the same time having no grasp of what it could be. You know, and but that's the box that everybody's in. Most of what we're talking about here is a way of processing for flexibility. A lot of this discussion in terms of if the state of North Dakota wants to do development in the future, you're going to want a level of flexibility. Inside your own box is going to be more difficult. And so we're thinking about how does that work for future development? And that's one of the central premises of this discussion. Do we think this is perfect? No, especially given the fact that we don't know what the legal framework is going to be.
See, that's but the part that, that this is great discussion. But that I get where you guys are at, but for North Dakota, shoot, we got all the possibility for wind in the future. We got all the possibility for gas. We could build a new coal plant if we stayed alone. So we're in a unique North Dakota situation where we could have our own energy resources. We could build all the new stuff we want. We could export it to other states. So I get where you're at, but I'm thinking as a state, we hold the card.
Does it? I mean, the companies are.
I know. Who does it? MDU does it, not Otter Tail, and
well,
we give
them. They're multi-state.
But here's where that kind of goes in the ditch. Okay, so at what point, you know, for a long time, Basin North Dakota was export constrained, right? We couldn't export any more electricity out of the state just because from a transmission standpoint, we were cooked. And so since the Bakken has developed, we've changed that significantly in terms of, okay, now we have a load sunk there that we have that opportunity to. But at what point, you know, given that number, which I think is going to go lower in the state of North Dakota, given the way the plan is already shaping up, at what point do you say, okay, how much wind can you bring on and still serve load? How much could you actually transmit? What is the incentive then, given the way these state plans are matching up, for any utility to say, yeah, we're going to do more wind here just because we like doing more wind? And that's where this isolate process is going to go in the ditch. If you can't figure out a flexible way of bringing the whole system together, the system isolates itself and then makes bad decisions.
Let me ask about the other ditch on the other side of the road. From a reliability standpoint and from a cost standpoint, if what the EPA is proposing was a good idea, they wouldn't really need to propose it, because if those were the only two factors, you all would just be doing it, right? If it increased reliability and lowered cost, you would be doing it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we know it's going to
one or the other or both either hurt reliability or drive up costs. So we can look at, you know, a company or a few companies or a state or a couple states and say, well, if we just shift this around, it kind of balances out. But we know generally it's going to be harmful to the customers. And so is the other ditch that I'm talking about, the fact that what you and most companies are talking about here is we kind of, oh, we fight a little bit, but generally cave in to the EPA, but look to the state regulators to be the bearers of bad news with the rate increases to everybody. Maybe we should be looking at this more like we did with healthcare exchanges and saying, yeah, you made this mess, federal government, go ahead and fix it and just not even be doing plans.
I think you're right from the standpoint that we see reliability and cost from base electric standpoint as central. But the other thing that, you know, our board is very clear on, we want to create a policy option that allows for coal. The reason we want to, we prefer stability. We prefer a fuel source that, you know, is abundant and near us. We think that there is a technology opportunity even to meet, you know, CO2 obligations within enhanced oil recovery in the Bakken. We see a path for all that. Now, the question becomes how hard this discussion is about, okay, one possible thing. We have to have this discussion now with you folks just so that at the last minute we're not having a discussion about, holy, we lost the lawsuit, we did this, everything went in the at what point is it reasonable to start talking about the flexibility that's going to be necessary should this go a direction none of us want to see happen? That's the kind of dialogue we're having now. But as Dale started out with, we think that there are some serious legal concerns here. given the fact we have no idea how those are going to end up, okay, it's time to have some discussion about what's the framework down the road.
Are you saying, to Randy's point, which is, a valid option to say to the EPA, you guys, this is your priority, you guys figure out how to make it happen, because we're not going to embrace be the bearer of the bad news to the customers. If you go that route, you've lost the opportunity to create a pathway for coal, because they'll just create their own way and it'll be turn it off, increase prices. We don't care. Is that what you're saying?
And more than that, what comes first? So do you say right now there are states that are going to say, we're not going to do anything on this, federal government, you come, you put a FIP on us, and that's the deal. Is the lawsuit that the state's going to be engaged in come first? Does that get settled out before that? At what point do these decisions get made? We're advocating that the state, you know, investigate the legal questions here. So I'm assuming, and I think it's a fairly safe assumption, that the governor and the attorney general are, you know, going to move through that process. Does that get decided before you submit, you know, at what point does the PSC, does the health department, does the governor decide, well, we're not going to submit anything because we've lost here or we've won there? The question for us in general is, do you decide now that you're just going to let the federal guys, you know, put this in place the way they see fit? I think that's a question mark.
But to get to the punchline from my viewpoint, it's at the end of the day, the governor's got a tough call. And it's his choice what he does via the health department. And you want him to say this, and the three of us have to decide where we're going to weigh in at. And when the governor asks, what do you think of the basin plan, we'll have to give a response. And you're prepping us today so we can say, yeah, it's okay, or it's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's about what it comes down to, I think.
Well, and we're hoping your response is basically supportive of the legal efforts that you're trying to go through. They're supportive of putting together a plan, and not just throwing it to the federal government saying, okay, you know, EPA, you do whatever you want. Then, to me, that limits the state's ability to be involved in a lawsuit, to saying, well, why are you involved in a lawsuit? You've already said you're not going to do anything about it. You've given up your authority to regulate in the state. So at that point, you sit back in your chairs and watch the world go by and let the federal government take care of it. I don't think that's a
commission. I think they're doing things to our citizens and the customers of North Dakota companies. Are we eliminated from participation in the lawsuit against that?
Actually, the attorneys, I asked that question to several attorneys, and they said, Brian, if the state doesn't submit something, you've lost a lot of standing. Because I asked that same question, how can that be? And it's I'm not an attorney. That's the answer.
It's the same theory as like the folks in who are against the Cap X line. They didn't show up at the hearing, and they didn't file any comments. And so when they came back afterwards protesting, the judge said, sorry, you lost your chance to speak up, and now you don't have standing. Is it that same legal
I believe so.
Premise?
That's part of it. I think you just first have to just look at the timeline, because the lawsuit, it's going to go through the U.S. Supreme Court.
But that doesn't mean the PSC can't say no. That's the Attorney General's decision of North Dakota, not ours. And so that's the position I think that I hear my colleague. We can't say no or yes. But we can come out and say, hey, this is a federal problem, the feds fix it.
But
our Attorney General can file the lawsuit, and then we're all doing or protecting our turf, if you will.
That might be the case, but you know that lawsuit's going to take about 3 years to work its way through the court, give or take 6 to 9 months. So it's maybe 4 years, maybe three, but probably maybe two and a half, but probably at least three. And the state plans are going to be due within a year. And Mike's point, I think, is really important to remember. There's an ability to extend that an additional 2 years if we look at the multi-state option. And we're going to have to file those plans within a year, or if not, EPA will have the ability to do a FIP within a year, and we're going to have 2 years of implementation of EPA's federal implementation plan before the Supreme Court even gets to it. And we certainly, that would be really bad for us. So we at least want to have that 3-year period where we can fight the legal challenge, but also put together the multi-state approach that's going to have the least impact on the cost to our member owner consumers, because that's kind of what our board's about, ensuring lowest cost resource and reliability to the people that buy our wholesale power. So that's kind of where we're coming from, and we're just suggesting that if the state can buy into the multi-state approach, at least for some utilities, and I think EPA is pretty likely to allow that partial multi-state approach. I've heard that said at a couple.
Call it a state-based company plan.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
We ended up with company-based multi-state plan, but I think state-based. Company.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of our core thing today is to just make sure that's an option and leave that door open so that the EPA is not going to be in here doing the federal implementation plan in a year. So
you guys have no choice.
No, actually we don't.
we have a different.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You're here to protect the.
Well, I'm glad to have heard this from you.
Absolutely.
Because Dave did mention this, and I didn't really grasp what he was talking about. So this puts more meat to that concept, and I think it's kind of clever, but I also need to think more about what the downsides are from our standpoint. You know, what are we losing in this type of a scenario in terms of state authority or jurisdiction or control over generation resources or whatever it is. So I think about that.
That was the question that I teed up that you guys said we get to maybe if I don't keep talking too much. But this co-op, it's yours to do what you want. But in MDU, it's different. Like whatever you decide multi-state plan, you just come in for a siting application, we accept or reject. But now if that's you guys' hierarchy. But for MDU, it's got to be different because they'll decide what generation to build in what state, whether it's needed and where to do it. That's the one. So you said that this would work for an investor-owned. What did you mean by that? That's when I asked that question earlier. You said
they could have the choice. They could say we just want to stay within the borders of North Dakota, and we're going to develop our compliance. We're working under the assumption that from a state standpoint, you're not going to look at everybody in a group and say, okay, as a group, you got to all come together so that you know.
Okay, so I
got to work with MDU to work out some numbers that we got to work with Excel.
This approach would work for an MDU. You're saying this would be they could work on a different plan that wouldn't compromise this.
Exactly, they could do
or they could do something like this too. Yeah.
But I would advocate the thing again, depending on the time frame, depending on the lawsuit, depending on the way these structures are going to roll out, what the PSC's authorities are going to be. Potentially very compromised in this position or not, all those things pending, you are going to want to think about a framework that is flexible as possible for utilities, whether it be investor-owned or a co-op, to think about the best allocation of resources. Because to Randy,
see, that's where we part ways quickly, because least cost planning and reliability is the bedrock of rate bases. So it's not flexibility, it's least cost.
But that's what gets
flexibility
you
flexibility gets you to.
Yeah.
That's what, and that will eventually get you the least cost, most reliable, and that would be my, I tend to think that you're going to get the best argument. And I really do. If you don't, the whole problem with RTOs right now is because they've drawn the line on
point.
The map. And they've said, every time you cross that line, you pay more. You draw a line around North Dakota, one way or the other, eventually, every time you want to cross that line, it's going to cost you more. And so this is a question you guys have to think about.
Mm-hmm. But Mike, does flexibility cease to get you lower costs when you switch from cost-based distribution to
environmental-based?
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely will.
It ends to be least cost at that point.
Yep, but again, this is a question of when you answer these.
You're assuming that we lose that argument.
Assuming you lose that argument.
He's assuming that argument is lost. And if this goes forward, we do lose that argument. I mean, that's basically the premise of these rules is you're now, the goal is lower carbon. That's the big goal. It is not low cost, and it may not be reliability. You hope that it's reliability and that still remains supreme, but that if this is approved, then I think it's clear that the goals are low carbon, reliability, low cost.
In that order. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in that order.
Maybe reliability is above low carbon.
I doubt it.
Yeah, you hope so.
I don't think we'd give away anything if you guys submit this plan.
No, I don't.
But, I mean, we as the, to you guys, but it's a different argument somewhere else.
Well, I'm sort of struggling with the advantages of this versus, like, the RTO approach. I mean, to me, that having them in charge, inherently that makes me the most nervous because they just strictly go with a carbon price and coal will be way back down.
Yeah, they presented that.
And then it's not going to be.
$45 a ton is what Southwest Power Pool put in their model of how they would do their environmental dispatch. And they said they could make it all work. They'd blend North Dakota's numbers into Texas, and they could make the whole SPP work, and they'd charge coal this much. And they got.
And then what is our role? We're just a pass-through.
Yeah, we just pass-through.
I mean, we just, like, tell us what we're
call
doing.
People and tell them how much your rates are going up.
Yeah, exactly. So this, to me, I mean, we'd have discussions with the companies about what they're doing and why, and, yeah.
The RTO model complete takes away the structure from the health department, takes away the structure from the Public Service Commission, takes away the structure from the governor.
Yeah.
That's the problem, and that's why none of these decisions will be made fully for a number of years.
Yeah.
And frankly, an RTO made up of states like Wyoming and South Dakota and North Dakota and Oklahoma and Texas, I'd be a lot less concerned about than one made up of states like Minnesota and Illinois.
Well, but some of the...
That's the ditch I really worry about.
Some of these states, like Texas, they can't even begin to meet their numbers. They don't have... They just can't meet it alone, South Dakota. So it's a... Anyway.
Yeah. Those final numbers are going to be very, very interesting. And I suspect we'll be in a much different situation after they give us our final number.
We think so as well.
But with the plan that we were looking at, is the idea that we look at what is the total megawatt hours and emissions developed in North Dakota by base electric facilities. And we're working on the assumption that that end number, once we put in all our generation with the gas and the wind and combine it with the coal, will be below the EPA number. So we will not have to use all of the megawatt hours and emissions generated in the state to meet the goal. What we're assuming, and you can go to multi-state plan number 3, that we are then allowed to take those megawatt hours and emissions and add them to the numbers produced in another state. Let's look at Wyoming. We've got a lot of coal, don't have a lot of wind, don't have a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. So in there, we're stuck in a situation in Wyoming where we don't have growth, we don't have a lot of opportunities for wind, and we've got to meet a number. Our box gets pretty small on what we need to do. You know, we need to change the operations of our existing facilities or add a bunch of wind to get down there. But if we've
in
got
that scenario, Dale, that also just from a coal standpoint is bad because you're going to shut down those plants and replace them with something that isn't coal.
Mm-hmm. That's
ultimately, you know, versus blending with the state that has some wind resources to add and making coal in general more sustainable.
Yes, absolutely right. It provides that path.
What do you guys think about MRETs? Who should get credit for the facilities? The state or you guys, or how do you
see that? Well, that's another one when we get into the rules. We talk about, in our opinion, a megawatt hour in the emissions should apply to two things. You should be able to apply it to a state goal, and you should be able to apply it to a federal compliance goal.
But who gets credit for it?
The state goal and the
you
state
get, you get you could use the same megawatt hour in emission to meet both.
Let me rephrase the question. So if the generator gets it, okay, that's the answer I was trying to look at, okay. The generator gets credit for it, you put it however you want to.
Yes, okay, I'm sorry.
But like Minnesota, if they don't get credits, if Great River Energy doesn't get credits for their stuff in North Dakota, there are never going to be any more wind farms built in North Dakota.
Right. Probably. That's right. See, and that's another part of what we see with
this plan.
This
kind of solves that.
If this plan is allowed to happen, say from if North Dakota says, yep, in our plan we'll allow it to happen, Wyoming says we'll allow this trading to take place, and South Dakota allows it, then we have that ability to move. Then we're going to put resources? We're going to put resources where they make the most sense.
Right.
And yet, we will have the ability to make sure every state we operate in is in compliance with the EPA goals as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you flush that out in here anywhere about the MRETs?
Yeah. Well,
not really.
Not the MRAP. That's the terminology right here, is very critical on this, where we're not talking about renewable energy credits. We're talking about the emissions and related megawatt hours. Because you're talking two different things. If you're talking an RPS in a state and an EPA
compliance. I like your plan a little better. Because that's the only reasonable answer I've heard for how to allocate MRETs. It didn't click for me before when you showed this slide.
And it's kind of a, especially any exporting state like North Dakota, where you export both coal and your renewables. It's really critical to be able to, when you sell that, to take whatever property right you have and apply it to the relevant jurisdiction. Let's take the Minnesota RPS, for example. It's going to be 25%, or is it already? But it's going to be 25%.
30%.
It's going to be 30.
And what utility it is. Excel's going to be better than Otter Tail does.
But a good percentage of that for the companies in North Dakota, that other 70% is most likely a high percentage North Dakota coal. So you're offsetting that 70% of coal with the 30% of wind, both of which are produced in North Dakota. That's at the distribution co-op level. Mm-hmm. At the generation level, you'd simply be able to apply that federal credit, which is different than the state credit at the state of origin. You're not double counting because you're offsetting that same megawatt of coal with wind in Minnesota and North Dakota. So you're not double counting the wind or the coal. If you can't count the wind in North Dakota in both places, then you're going to have to do a double offset of the coal because you have to generate 2 megawatts of wind to offset that 1 megawatt of coal instead of just one. And you're having to offset the coal twice if that's the situation. So this is, I think, maybe the most important issue for everybody in this region to understand is that the fact that you shouldn't have to offset the coal twice if you're offsetting it with wind that's generated, especially in the same state. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of tracking that and coming up with the vocabulary and the agreements to allow that, so there isn't any double counting of either the coal or the wind. So
maybe we shouldn't have to offset the coal that we export.
Or you can offset it. But it's the same megawatt hour should be able to be used in both places because it's just 1 megawatt hour of each. So if on the distribution level it's counted in Minnesota, that doesn't mean at the generation level, if it's the same megawatt hour and the same of wind and the same megawatt hour of coal, it you should be able to, because the federal one's going to have to be offset in the state where it's generated. Under the RPS system, they just kind of ignore the other 70% in Minnesota, but they already are doing that practically. That's what they're doing, is they're offsetting that coal from North Dakota with that wind from North Dakota. So it's simply coming up with a tracking system that acknowledges what's already happening and then not having to offset it twice. So
we should know soon what they're going to call and what they're going to do.
Yeah, but the exporting states really have to work together on this one because they're all going to be in the same boat. We talked to Wyoming a couple weeks ago, and we spent maybe an hour and a half of our 2 hours talking just about this issue, the one we just mentioned. So we talked with Al and then Tom Parfit about this one for about an hour and a half.
Al's a true warrior, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is. We're lucky to have him out there. Yeah, he's.
I think with the rest of the parts of the utility state plan, if we've pretty much covered already, as far as we take the whatever excess we are, we add it to, like if it's in Wyoming, we add it to what's already being generated and add it to the emissions already being emitted. And again, put both states below the EPA goal. The rules that we talked about, and this is what we got into just now, is allowing the emissions and megawatt hours from each entity to be used for federal compliance and state compliance so that you have that ability to do that. When we, the transfer of the compliance megawatt hours, we just think keeping that to like natural gas and to renewables just makes it a cleaner transfer and cleaner compliance. And then just the accountability that you make sure that these emissions and megawatt-hours can be tracked back to their source, so there's no double counting that happens between states.
Say, is this whole issue about the not having to count it twice, or not allowing them to count them twice, is that really, is there folks out there that think you should have to have somehow separate, you have to meet the state RPS goal one way and then you have to have more to meet the federal? I mean, to me, it just seems so obvious they have to be together.
Well, to me, it seems obvious if you're going to have this EPA plan, why do you need an RPS?
Well, yeah.
All state RPSs should go away, but I'm sure I'm not
but I think
the majority on that.
The state law would be set up a certain way to count them or the state rules. So they probably got something Minnesota says to count them by distribution. And then it just muddles up. The code's all different. Mm. Policies right. are different, so yeah. they just count them differently.
Mm. Yep.
They never envisioned a North Dakota generator counting it when they put Minnesota RPS in play.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Yeah, the RPS goes away if you get this. It doesn't go away.
If you talk to the environmentalist groups, they just care about making sure the wind isn't counted twice. But they don't care if the coal, you have to offset it twice. But that's how it's going to work if this issue isn't raised.
But it seems like you're under the assumption that if this were passed as proposed, say, and made to work, that the environmental community will be satisfied.
No.
I don't think we're under that illusion.
Until the last coal plant is
closed. Then why would the RPSs go away? The states that are very heavily into their citizens are very into the environmental movement, whatever this is, they're going to say, well, good, but it's not near enough. And so now, maybe Minnesota wants a 70% renewable.
And the federals...
I don't think you can assume that...
Well, the governor has said they're going to be coal-free. Carbon-free, didn't he say? Dayton, carbon-free in Minnesota?
Mm-hmm. There again, that's why we think 100%. The distinction is very critical that we make that these megawatt hours and emissions have the ability to meet a federal standard and a state standard.
Well, who can say that?
Yeah.
Who can make that? Can the Fed say that? Some say it can't do a stricter portfolio standard. I don't know how they
do
that.
No.
How do we accomplish that?
It's actually, unless you, under the Clean Air Act, federal standards always the floor. States can always be more stringent.
California's way off.
Yeah, way off.
Make this fight in every legislature who's passing an RPS and how it's going to be counted.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's where you make the argument.
You make the fight in the legislature, but you also make it here from the standpoint that a few folks end up in this situation. You're saying that we in North Dakota will make sure that we're arguing for only being counted.
Yeah. Yep.
If any questions? On the almost the last page here, we're talking about the final rule concerns, things that we're concerned about when the final rule comes out. If they don't allow a utility-based trading program, then that changes what we need to do state by state. Changing the original state compliance numbers, we're pretty well convinced that the numbers are going to change between the states. And one way that we've heard they're going to do that is number three, where instead of using the RPSs of the states as an average, they're going to go to some sort of the capability of the state to meet renewable standards. So by doing that, you could lower North Dakota's number and hopefully get the numbers up someplace else. We're also convinced that the 30% goal is pretty much set in stone, that if South Dakota comes up, someone else comes down, that there's going to be a balancing effect that isn't just going to happen in one spot. And if they go with a utility or renewable potential versus RPS, that's one way they can do that adjustment. But that, to us, is fraught with a lot of red flags as far as where do they go with it. We've got great potential, but the ability to put it in, the ability to transport it, the ability to use it, it's all different. So those are the big three concerns that we've got as far as what's the rule, the final rule going to look like versus the proposed rule. Then as far as the appendix on the back is just the different companies or different organizations that looked at reliability, kind of a snapshot of what they came up with their conclusions on them.
Did the governor give you guys any feedback, or did he hold his cards real close?
The governor said he likes Wyoming, but his goal is to make sure North Dakota's covered.
What a good guy.
But I think in looking at it, he understood. He wanted to make sure we weren't at cross purposes with what the state was trying to do, and we assured him that that's not the case, that we're following it that. But, again, if it has to go in, this is something that we think, again, helps Basin, can help other utilities meet the goal as well, but yet not disadvantage the state, not disadvantage other utilities.
Is this sort of a follow-up to or the health department saying, here's our state plan, we can accomplish 2% on block one, period, and that's all that we have authority to? Or is it that plus, and then we're going to allow companies to come up with their plans for meeting to come under the total emission standard? Or is it one or the other?
We think it can go several ways. I mean, I think if the state just says we're just going to do building block one and that's it, fine. And if that goes through, great. We're fine and dandy with that. We'll be very supportive of that. But if it comes back and they said no, that's not going to work, you have to come up with an additional compliance plan.
Okay.
Then we say, okay, then allow us to do this. So, or if they want to include it in their first plan, saying that, you know, this is our plan is a 2%, but we will allow some trading, you know, to us, it's an open question. But I guess we think that this comes into play if we get forced into the situation of having to do a plan that will comply with all of the numbers that EPA throws out.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
When we met with Dave 3 or 4 weeks ago, my understanding of their position was that they would require each utility to submit a plan that would satisfy building block one, and then they'd give us the option to file something in addition to that, but it would be voluntary because all they were going to require in terms of submitting their plan was a building block one. And I guess what we're suggesting is if we look at the multi-state utility approach that might be a way for us to at least delay time that the health department has to finalize those plans from 1 year to 2 or 3 years, hopefully 3 years, so that we give a chance for the litigation to work its way through. And before EPA would FIP us and we'd have to do our own, start complying with their federal implementation plan a year or two before the litigation's even done in front of the Supreme Court. So if there was some way to stay it, that would solve that problem, but that's kind of a long shot. So this is, I think, our second best option of getting more time.
Hi, Nick. Okay. Well, we have a special meeting starting at 2, so I think that we've gone through your whole presentation, and unless there's anything else, we can set up another meeting to continue these discussions, or we can plan to get together after the rules are out. I'm sure we'll be doing something of that nature once the final rule becomes public.
Something else that we did discuss with the governor and their staff is kind of a Western North Dakota update. As far as, you know, generation and transmission, I think at this point we don't have anything in front of the commission right now. So it may be a time we could sit down with you guys and say, here's what we're doing, here's what we're planning, here's what we're thinking, here's how things are going.
That would be great.
Yeah, the way to do that.
When were you planning on doing that?
Whenever you want us to come in and do that.
Okay, we'll add that to our scheduling at our next meeting, which is in a week from Wednesday.
Taking some wind in front of us, or is that?
It's been.
They're the buyer. They're not deciding.
Okay, so can we go ahead and pick some times for that, or maybe you want to get together with Jerry or something and offer some potential dates? All right. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Mike. Thanks for coming in.
See you. Take care. See you, Dale. I started chuckling in the middle of the
Oh, here we go. The flowered one, right? The white and flowered one? Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Can you give me a piece of information unless you just kind of know? Because I only need a rough estimate. Mm-hmm. The DGC.
All right. Thank you, guys.
CO2 do you capture, as opposed to how many tons of coal you burn at PGC?
It's about 50%.
But we're about 50% of what
for every ton of coal, or 2 tons of coal you burn, you capture a ton of CO2?
Every ton of CO2 we emit, we capture a ton of CO2. So